was really gone.
And very good evening to everybody. It's time now for Off the Hook here on WBAI, New York.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. I couldn't get much work, but if they could, they would. Only the bones was the best effect for work.
Everybody, this is another edition of Off the Hook. I'm Manuel Goldstein, fiber optics over, not near a microphone fiber. There you go. That's better. You there? You're number five.
Yeah.
Okay, I got you.
Okay.
It's been a fun week and lots of activity, lots of things that we've learned about, and we're going to be bringing you all kinds of details on that throughout this hour, as well as taking phone calls. But that's a little bit later on. We have new information on the Bernie S. case and related cases, how it could affect you and many other people throughout the nation, as it has already been doing. So we will have that coming up in just a couple of moments. What's new in the there's a New York Times article today, isn't there, on the three Kevin Mitnick books?
Yeah, there certainly is.
Now, I wonder why it took them a month to review them, or maybe they reviewed them before, but they're now reviewing all three of them together as sort of a phenomenon in and of themselves.
Well, maybe nobody noticed because it wasn't splashed on the front page.
Uh-huh. Well, there's the old picture of Mitnick again, the picture of Shimomura.
At least they're using the newer picture of Kevin. Now.
Yeah, well, ever since they got that picture of him going out of the van in North Carolina, they've had new footage to go with.
At least they're not using the baby fat picture anymore.
That's true. You know, I didn't when I hung out with them in California back in 1990, I didn't think to take a single picture. I could have used those pictures, and they would have replaced all the ones back from, like, the 70s that they were using in the newspaper, you know. I probably could have sold them for $100,000, too, and everybody would have been far more educated and whatever. Supposedly, Kevin's hearing has been postponed until April now. It was scheduled for, I believe, today, and it was moved back to April. I don't know why they keep doing this. I don't know why they keep moving things back, but it's real torture, especially when you're already in prison, so there's not a whole lot we can tell you as far as that particular case right now, except that, you know, he's still in prison. It's over a year now. Think about it. Over a year. Now, you have to ask yourself, is that, you know, has he served enough time for what he is accused of doing, namely violating probation? And what were the other things? Well, supposedly, allegedly, breaking into Shimomura's machine, although
allegedly.
More and more doubt being cast on that by the moment.
Well, he's a computer security expert.
You know, someone broke into his machine again, apparently, because if you telnet over to port 25 of the takedown website, you'll see a little thing in brackets that says KDM was here, you know, Kevin David Mitnick, and somebody also changed the name of Sendmail to Send Whale. Somebody is playing around there, and it's been like that since the 14th of February.
Apparently, he doesn't check his own SMTP port.
I don't think there's a lot of checking going on that particular system, but
he's too concerned with security.
So this guy, Kevin, is locked up in prison for a year. I don't think the net is a better place for it, and I'm not really sure what is being proven by this, but let's just make sure he's not forgotten sitting over there somewhere in California. We'll bring you more details as we get them on that, and we'll try to look more into his case after the Bernie S. case gets finished. Bernie S., of course, is the person we've been following throughout the last year who has been put in prison for the better part of that year for ridiculous charges, for having hardware, for having software, and no one's really quite sure what he's being accused of. We'll get to that in a minute, but first we have something important to talk about, namely the new 9X phone bills. I got mine. Did you get yours?
I got mine, too.
Well, pretty nifty, huh? They come in blue envelopes now.
Yeah.
And they really stink, don't they? I can't stand these things. I can't understand them at all. They're laid out in some bizarre fashion.
I think they mean well by using recycled paper.
I don't think they mean well. No, I think they're out to get us. But that's another theory. They've been using recycled paper for a while.
Have they?
Yeah. I mean, everyone has. McDonald's has been using recycled paper. Everyone's using recycled paper. It's the big thing these days.
Oh.
But I don't. They reorganized the way their bills look simply because, I don't know why. Did you have a problem with the old bills?
No, not at all. In fact, I don't like how the new bills don't break down the time chart with the different calling areas.
Well, yeah, that's only one of the few things that they do wrong.
That was a major thing, or it said that you needed your phone book as an accompaniment.
You need your phone book to read your phone bill?
That's what it said, yeah.
To figure out how much you're supposed to be...
To figure out what times and what calling areas...
This is for what, regional calls?
Both local and regional.
You see, now that they have competition has finally been introduced, all right, on the local level. It's not really local, it's regional local, which means, well, what does it mean for people in New York? It means people making calls to what, Nassau?
The region, yeah, would be probably Westchester, Nassau, and Suffolk.
But not New York City?
No, New York City is considered local.
And not 718?
The five boroughs are considered local. Yeah.
Okay. So... Now we have regional local calls and regular local calls. So there's two different parts in the bill for those two different types of calls, and you can select a different company for regional, but I think you're still stuck with 9X for the real local stuff. And it's broken down in those ways. It's kind of confusing because the way they do it, I wish I had a bill in front of me, but they itemize everything. Like, first of all, they itemize the total. That's number one. Then the first phone call to make the total is item number two. So they're itemizing things that are totally different type of things. Where it used to be they numbered the calls, now the calls start at, say, number two or number three, and number one is the total. And I don't understand why they have to do this. It sounds like, you know, poor programming on their part. No long-distance bill I've ever seen is that confusing-looking. And, you know, here's the real clincher. They say, this is their way out of it, they say, we listen to you. You gave us your feedback, and here it is. So it's our fault that this is happening, you know? Anything that's wrong with this is because you told us to do this. Now, I don't remember telling 9X to restructure their bill like that. And if anyone out there did tell them this, please turn yourself in now, because I'd sure like to hear what the story behind that was. This was 9X's idea, I think, and they just want to put some insurance in. Now, I don't know how many people have tried to pay the bill yet, but when you try to pay the bill, you might... by chance tear on the perforated line. I discovered there's actually, for some bizarre reason, two perforated lines on the front page. I tore on the wrong one, and it was only after I put the thing into the envelope and realized that there was just nothing there, you know, or just like random text where the little window is and it wasn't going to go anyplace, I realized that I was supposed to rip off the second perforated line, take that part of the piece of paper and stick that in the envelope. So I had to do that, and that left me with this little thin strip, which was the region separating two perforated lines. So I had this like little mini one-inch wide phone bill that I don't know what to do with. Why would they print two perforated lines on a page? It doesn't make any sense.
You got me.
Well, I'm asking you, and I think you should come up with an explanation for this. That's our little expose on the new 9X phone bills. Anything else?
Let's see. Trying to think.
ISDN, maybe. We haven't talked about ISDN in a
while. Yeah, that's true. You know, we haven't spoke about ISDN lately.
Anything new in the realm of ISDN?
Well, have you heard anything new in the on-again, off-again, penny-a-minute charge?
Nothing new since the last rumor that we started last week that they were thinking of stopping it.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything new since then. From anybody.
Yeah.
Nobody at all. Absolutely silent on that front.
Well, I'd sure like to get to the bottom of that. I still haven't heard anything one way or the other. Mm-hmm. Our friends at Pearl Street continue to be tied up rather frequently.
With what?
As far as being able to take orders.
And why is that?
Apparently there's been some increase in demand or something. But, I mean, people that I've suggested ordering ISDN to recently were not able to get through to a representative. And I've called a couple of times to try to take care of some problems, not with me, but with somebody else, and was not able to get through and haven't heard back from them yet. So, 9X, if you're listening, please give me a call back. Thanks.
I guess that's the only way to get a call back is to get on a 50,000-watt radio station and get a message out. But how about the actual service? Has the service been...
My service has been just chugging along rather readily. I'm actually hoping some new services come out. I'm really eager for something new to happen. There has been talk about new POTS services in the works.
You mean for non-ISP?
Yeah, for regular people.
What kind of new services?
Like distinctive call waiting and caller ID on call waiting.
And caller ID with name attached?
Yeah, caller ID with name delivery and so on.
Nothing really new, though. I mean, other parts of the country have had this for a while.
Certain parts have had it, yeah. Then there's also some call management features that are coming out that do things that we've always complained about on the show for years, like being able to add somebody on call waiting into three-way.
Wouldn't that be nice?
You will.
I will, huh?
With,
all right,
with
I'll
9X
it.
Call management.
I got a little counter to that you will thing. I'll believe it when I see it.
Okay. Well, it's being tested right now somewheres around, I believe, around Poughkeepsie.
You don't say. Well, okay, to move on to a couple of other rather important things. The Bernie S. case, hopefully we'll hear from him later tonight, although I'm not really sure if we will hear from him. I got a bunch of collect calls from him earlier today to my machine, unfortunately. You know, it was at a bizarre time, which I'm never up, so I can't understand why he was calling at that time, unless something was happening that he needed to get a hold. And there's no way to leave a message, obviously, with these automated collect things, so... usually we hear from him by now, so I don't know if something has changed, something has happened, but I can tell you on our front something very definitely has changed, and that involves something we've been interested in from the very beginning, other cases that have similar meaning than that the Bernie S. case has to us. Well, we found something that... it's really unfortunate, you know, that it took so long to find out this information, but there was actually an article in this magazine called Nuts and Vaults, which a lot of people have heard about on this radio show. It's kind of hard to find, and I guess we had the same problem finding it, but there was an article in there in the current issue called Cellular Extensions on Trial, Secret Service Targets Extension Cloner. And, you know, I looked at this and I said, wow, it's an article on Bernie S., but you know what? It's an article of somebody else. Somebody else is going through the same thing. And here's the really ironic part. The article begins, in what is probably the first case of its kind, a Kentucky man has been indicted on federal fraud charges for cloning extension funds to existing cellular service agreements. Now, what's amazing about that is that, obviously, it's not the first case of its kind. So in this particular case, that person also had the same problem finding out about Bernie S. We couldn't find out about this Kentucky guy. He couldn't find out about Bernie S. It just isn't enough communication. And despite all the technology we have at our fingertips, we didn't have enough to get this story on time. Because this was happening last year. This was happening towards the end of last year. Don Billy Yates of Lexington, Kentucky, was indicted on November 2nd, 1995, by a federal grand jury. The indictment charges Yates with possessing and using equipment for altering and modifying telecommunications instruments with intent to defraud cellular phone companies. The entire cellular phone industry will be watching the case because it is thought to be the first such criminal prosecution in the United States, said Thomas Tolliver of the Lexington Herald Leader, who happens to be totally wrong on that. Obviously, it's not the first case of its kind. Fraudulent use of a cellular phone has traditionally involved programming the mobile identification number, known as the MIN, an electronic serial number, known as the ESN, of an unsuspecting subscriber's cellular phone into an additional phone, which then became an electronic clone of the original. The cellular bandit would place calls with this duplicate phone, causing the charges to appear on the victim's monthly bill. Cellular carriers end up absorbing the cost of these calls, claiming their collective losses exceed $300 million annually. Well, guess what? There's another way to do this exact same thing without breaking any laws whatsoever, and that's if you if you make your own extension on a cellular phone. You use the same technique, but you're not doing it for criminal purposes. Actually, I said it's not violating any law. That's kind of what the argument is right now, whether or not it does violate a particular law of any sort. This article really goes into quite a bit of detail on it. The person who wrote it, Damien Thorne, is quite knowledgeable on the subject. He says, as a whole, the cellular industry has disliked this practice since it deprives them of the revenue generated through one-time activation fees and the base charge assessed against every cellular phone number assigned. This per-number charge is often itemized on the customer's bill as an access fee and ostensibly covers the cost of accounting, preparing bills, and accommodating the user's cellular phone within the network. Whether or not a customer places and receives calls, his or her cellular phones periodically transmitting information to the cellular network, which in turn keeps track of the transceiver's approximate location. Since each transceiver consumes resources within the network to some extent, the access fee assessed by carriers is generally not an unreasonable charge. What it appears the cellular industry is currently trying to do is set a precedent in which they claim they are actually entitled to these access fees and activation charges whether or not a customer consumes resources within the network. Now, they print the entire affidavit against this guy, and then they go into some detail on the inaccuracies of the story. The story as presented by the Secret Service and the cellular companies. Anyone with even a bit of knowledge pertaining to the operation of cellular phones and networks has probably laughed at some of the blatantly incorrect information concerning this case. The most glaring error is the assertion made that electronic serial numbers and mobile phone numbers are the property of the cellular carrier. You ever heard that argument made, Fiverr? That the phone number is the property of the carrier itself?
I can't say I have, no.
You've never heard that argument? That's what the cellular phone companies are constantly saying.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the phone company, the local phone company, they have an argument that it's their phone number, it's their network. But when you have, you know, the cellular company, first of all, they have to get the phone number through the local phone company.
Yeah, I always figured that it would still be the property of the local phone company, ultimately.
Anyway, serial numbers are assigned and programmed by the manufacturers of cellular hardware and begin with a prefix that was assigned to each manufacturer by the FCC. Since this assignment is a matter of public record, not only are serial numbers not the property of the carrier, but at least two of the eight hexadecimal digits are a matter of public record. If there is any claim to an ESN being proprietary, the information should be considered the property of the phone's owner, since he has purchased the hardware bearing the ESN. Since a cellular carrier is not a telephone company in the technical sense, cellular telephone numbers don't really belong to them either. Since cellular carriers rely on the landline telephone company, which is a local exchange carrier, to route all calls into and out of the cellular network, such cellular numbers were no doubt assigned by the local telephone company. With all phone numbers moving toward portability, like the 800 numbers, in which a customer can keep a phone number no matter which carrier he or she chooses, these numbers will soon become the customer's property as well. Won't even belong to the phone company anymore. At this point, like a specific frequency in the radio spectrum, a carrier may be authorized to assign numbers from a pool set aside for their use, but they certainly don't own the numbers in the sense that one owns intellectual or real property. Although it may seem to be a minor point, this becomes very important when it is part of the foundation of a criminal case. Left unchallenged, the concept of a carrier owning ESNs and MINs lends great credibility to a carrier alleging that their numbers have been stolen or used without permission. The technical reality, however, is that carriers are not entitled to claim ownership or control over these digits. A phone number is simply an address pointing to a customer. The affidavit also contains a misleading statement that customers using a cellular telephone with a telephone number and electronic serial number can obtain telephone service throughout the United States. This is self-evident, much like saying that a person with money can buy something. What the statement fails to mention is that such service can only be obtained if the telephone number and ESN reside in a cellular network database and are deliberately validated to allow calls to be made. As written, the statement gives the false impression that mere possession of these two numbers will somehow magically allow uncontrolled use of the cellular telephone network. The biggest falsehood, though, set forth in the affidavit in the opinion of this author is also the foundation for the entire case. With the programming or cloning of an extension phone, the only monies not being collected by the cellular carriers are the activation fee and the monthly access charge. Why do you suppose The Cellular One representative chose to claim that the actual loss in dollars to the cellular telephone industry is unknown to date due to their inability to differentiate between calls made on the originally purchased telephone and any phone cloned by Don Yates. This comment has nothing to do with Extension Cellular phones because the customer pays for any use of the phone, original or extension. That's a very important fact, you know. That's something that they don't seem to be... I sometimes wonder, maybe they just don't understand. Maybe they think that these people are stealing from them when in actuality they're just using an extension phone. You know, I expect them one day to say, oh, sorry, we got it all wrong. We thought you were stealing from us. Well, you were just using a cellular phone, you know, a cellular extension, no problem. It's tantamount to the phone company prosecuting you for having an extension phone, which some people were afraid of back in the 70s. They actually thought the phone company would come and charge them with something. No one thought something like this would happen, but there was a fair amount of paranoia.
It was the phone cops.
The phone cops, right, exactly. Everyone thought the phone cops were everywhere, and there was one phone company. You know, they had everything monitored. And, you know, back then, if you stood up in a group of 10 people, odds are one of them worked for the phone company somewhere because they owned everything. They owned your phone. They owned your phone. They owned the long-distance company. They owned the local company. They owned the wire. They owned the poles. So, yeah, quite a few people worked for the phone company, so they're kind of scared by that. But even with all that monopolistic paranoia that was imposed upon us, there was nothing to compare to this, where people were actually thrown in prison for making a cellular extension. Unbelievable. And the funny thing is, we're talking about Don Yates here, the guy in Kentucky who we just found out about. He was charged with having a black box which is used to make these cellular extensions. Bernie S. never even had a black box. He sold software that would enable you to make your own extension. Never even did it himself. This guy here would charge people $150 to make a cellular extension. That was his business. That's what he did. And Bernie S. would simply give you software. You could do it yourself. He was charged with less than this guy. Less. And they kept him in prison for 7 months, and they put him back in prison this year. And sentencing for that comes up next week, a week from today, in fact. Continuing with this, in this case, the carrier seems to be claiming that they are lawfully entitled to collect an activation fee and a monthly access fee for every transceiver owned by a customer. From there, the issue becomes clouded by falsehoods regarding undetermined losses and claims to ownership of the ESN that really belong to the customer. Throw in comments about an ESN and MIN allowing access to the network from anywhere in the country, and to a non-technical person, it would appear that there might actually be some fraud going on. It's pretty apparent that in this case, smoke and mirrors are being used to distort the truth. I think you had some smoke and mirrors in your case, didn't you, Fiber?
Yeah, actually, it sounds a lot like something they tried to pull on me, which was say that each and every network address on a particular network was worth X amount of dollars.
Uh-huh.
Like, just my knowledge of an address on a network, independent of a login or a password, but just knowing how to get to a computer on a network was worth so much money.
So the knowledge was where the fraud was.
Yeah.
You had it in your head. That was, they put a dollar.
Yeah, there's this intrinsic fraud in the knowledge, yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing how judges and juries and lawyers believe all this crap. I can't understand it. Smoke and mirrors all over the place here. In a recent issue of Nuts and Vaults, we mentioned the petition for reconsideration that has been ongoing before the FCC. A portion of the issue before the FCC is an assumption on the part of the commission that carriers are entitled to activation and access fees. Assumption is the key in that debate, as there does not appear to be any regulatory mandate which entitles carriers to assess these charges. In a written statement to the FCC, I'm having trouble reading this name, but someone whose last name is Glover, Chief Counsel for Advocacy of the Small Business Administration, made the following statement. What the proposed rule would not prevent is the offering of cellular extension service by some party other than the licensed cellular providers for the area. As the Office of Advocacy noted in its ex parte communication in support of the petition for reconsideration, nothing in the Communications Act mandates that cellular telephone companies are entitled to any specific amounts of revenue for its development of public resources. The proposal would protect cellular companies to the extent possible from fraud without denying the public needed competition in the provision of cellular extension telephone service. So here we have one federal agency telling another that it supports the rights of both customers and small businesses to compete with the cellular industry in providing extension cellular phones. Meanwhile, another branch of the government has slapped together a case to prosecute an individual for engaging in the very same business being advocated by the Small Business Administration. And this case with Mr. Yates, you know, he was being prosecuted, but there was another case where someone was imprisoned. And not only that, but there are cases currently in Chicago and in California, and I believe there's another one in Georgia that are taking place right now. This is all within the last few weeks where they are prosecuting people based on this. Now, something else that was unknown to us while all this was happening, last year, last spring, just about the time that Bernie S. was first imprisoned, a company known as JEM, located in southern New Jersey, was also visited by the Secret Service, and they had their entire customer list seized. That's how they found this Yates guy. They looked at the customer list, and they discovered that he was actually selling these boxes or making extensions for people's telephones. They got a list of all kinds of other people, though, and we don't know what they've done with that list yet, but it's a pretty frightening prospect to think that they have lists of names of people who have done business with certain companies, and they are investigating each and every one of those people. I think that we've pretty much covered everything from this story. Don Yates, just to finish up, Don Yates has become the unfortunate victim of the Secret Service and the cellular industry in their zeal to ensure the revenue streams to which they become accustomed, with literally hundreds if not thousands of individuals and businesses throughout the country offering cellular extension programming services. Mr. Yates just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time has become the principal in a case that will set a major precedent either for or against consumers of cellular telephony services. Well, he wasn't quite the principal. He was close to being the principal, I think, and he was in the wrong place at the wrong time, but he certainly could have been in a wronger place at a wronger time if he was Bernie S., I guess, in Philadelphia. There's one part of the story we have not told you yet, and that's how it all turned out, and that's probably the most interesting part of it. Mr. Yates decided to take on the government to actually plead not guilty to these charges. He took it all the way to a jury trial. And a jury trial took place this year, January, last month actually. And it took the jury less than 2 hours to come back with a verdict. The verdict was not guilty. He did not violate the law by offering cellular extensions, by making extensions for people. And when we think about this, we have one person who felt he had no chance of being found not guilty because of the way this law was written and the way that he was being harassed by Secret Service people. Him being forced to plead guilty and as a result of pleading guilty, having a conviction on his record, which then resulted in a probation violation, which resulted in him being put back in prison. And then you have one guy that took on the system and won. Two different cases, the same basic thing, and two totally different outcomes. Story just gets more and more amazing by the week. Next week we'll be, of course, reporting on the sentencing as they decide what's going to happen to Bernie S. I mean, if they give him any more prison time, I just don't understand how they can justify this at all. It's hard enough to justify what they've done to him so far, if they can even do that. But next week we will know just how that has turned out. So that will be happening next Tuesday morning at 8:30, and it's open to the public. If anyone wants to take a little road trip out to Easton, Pennsylvania, it's not the funnest town in the world, I have to tell you, but it's an education. You know, it's picture a small American town with a big whopping prison in the middle of it. I think just about everybody in town seems to work there. Of course, they all support the idea of a prison, and more prisoners is good for the town. So I guess he's welcomed there, even though he has not yet even seen the light of day since they put him in January. So that will be taking place next Tuesday, 8:30 in the morning. You can get to Easton by taking, Route 87? Yeah, I think it's Route 87, just heading west for about an hour and a half or so. And then you wind up on I think it's Route 611, just after you cross the Pennsylvania line. It takes you right to Easton. It's in the court building. And the more press we can get over there to witness this, the more people we can get over there to witness this, the better, because then you'll be able to tell more people about it, even if it's a worst-case scenario. Even if having more people there doesn't do any good at all, it certainly can't do any harm. And I think we've demonstrated the real problem here is that there's not enough communication. We didn't know about this case. Bernie's lawyer didn't know about this case. Had we known about this case, it could have made a big difference. The two cases could have been seen as the same basic test of the law, and he probably would not be in prison right now. So that's, I guess, a sobering education there as far as keeping informed. And it's only going to get bigger. More and more people are being dragged into this in various places. We'll keep you updated as soon as we find out more about that. But again, we have to hear about it in order to know. We're trying the best we can to learn about this. But it's not always possible to get all the details in a timely fashion. Anyway, I guess we're not hearing from Bernie S. tonight, and I don't know what that means. You know, I know he was trying to reach me earlier today, so there's not a whole lot we can do. We can't reach him, certainly. Best thing I could suggest to people is to keep checking the website on 2600.com. We'll have updates of Bernie S.'s story. Also, you can finger his account, Bernie S. at 2600.com, or send mail to that account. And if we learn anything, we will certainly pass it on. Our telephone number is 212-279-3400. We'll be taking your phone calls if you have any questions, comments, or experiences of your own. You know, there could be 100 cases like this going on right under our noses. We don't even know about it. So if you have a case like that, feel free to give us a call. 212-279-3400. Let's see who's out there. Good evening. You're on. Go ahead. Speak up.
Hello,
yes.
I am.
Yes. There you are. Speak up.
Alright.
That's what we're here for.
Listen, I wanted to tell you about that Bernie S. case.
Okay.
Eastern Pennsylvania. You take Route 78 West.
78. I had it backwards. Thank you very much.
Okay. Route 78 West. Okay. You get off around the 6 mile marker or so. You'll see a sign for Route 22. You take Route 22 across the river.
Wait a minute. Route 22?
Yeah. Well, you can go. You can continue on 78 and take it and pay the extra toll.
It's a 50 cent toll.
You can come across a free bridge and it leads you right to the prison. But at any rate, the prison is up there and the courthouse is up on a hill. Explain that to the people. When they get to Easton, they might come on the bus. And basically, there's a hill overlooking part of Easton, and it's overlooking this area. And from the bus station, it's a short cab ride.
How do you know where this little tiny town's courthouse
is? I live out that way.
You live out in Easton?
No, not in Easton, but I live about maybe 10 miles from there. You know, I'm over that way all the time. I'll be there. I'll see you there.
Oh, great.
Coming in the morning.
Great.
And I'll see you there. And let me ask you another question here. Ed said that he was a ham operator. Do you happen to know a ham call?
Not offhand, no.
All right, because, you see, if you guys got somebody who was a ham operator and got on the repeaters out there and spoke it up with the ham community,
yeah.
Lots of times they come out and support their kind, you know?
Excuse me, this is the 9X operator. Is this 279-3400?
Yes, operator, you're broadcasting to all of New York City right now. Can we help you?
Well, I have someone interrupting the line. He said it's an emergency from Emmanuel Goldstein. Will you give up the line?
Do you have a phone number that they're calling from?
I can't give out the number. He requested an interruption. This is a radio station?
Yes, it's a live talk show. Who do you favor in the primary, operator? Operator, we're taking a poll.
Dole.
I'm sorry?
Dole.
Who's Joel?
I said Dole. D-O-L-E.
Oh, Dole. Okay. All right.
Well,
mark one down for Dole.
Up your line then, right?
No, ask him to call back on the regular line.
I will tell him.
Thank you very much.
Can spell Dole better than other guy can spell potato.
Yeah. Dole, huh? Do you think most operators want Dole?
Geez, I hope not.
Wow.
I feel like it'd be CWA.
I didn't expect her to answer that. Anyway, I guess we should turn that off on our phone system.
So it might be possible to alert the ham community and have some of these people turn out, you know?
Yeah, well, that would be great. I'm not sure how well known he is. I know he went to a lot of ham fests.
Yeah.
But I'm not that tied into that community, so I don't really know.
Well, if you get a hold of Ed, ask him if he got on the air much, you know?
Uh-huh.
You know, maybe, you know, he's wanting to see, there's all kinds of ham amateur radio operators out there. Some just build, they never get on the air. Some just go to ham fests and they never actually buy anything, you know?
Right.
I mean, you know, there's all sorts of, it's a very, very interesting hobby.
Well, I do know that he was in total support of the whole, you know, ham situation of, you know, radio broadcasting and things like that. He was very much into it.
And, you know, one of the nights there, you had a show, I guess, about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And where I work over here at I was in one of the ready runs. Well, the guys are always picking up stuff on the airplanes, you know, newspapers, old magazines, you know, and they bring them down. So I was in one of the break rooms, and here was this magazine sitting there. It was called Hogs in the Tunnel or something like that was the title of it, all right? It was some avant-garde little pamphlet.
Okay.
About secret tunnels under Washington, D.C. And lo and behold, in there, written in there, is the code names for the president, the frequencies of the Secret Service use, you know.
Really?
Yeah, and here I am holding this thing and listening to your radio show and the whole explanation of this thing.
Wow.
It was like a month ago.
Do you have a way of getting a hold of those people?
Getting a hold of who?
The people that published that.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Hang on, we got another operator coming in here.
I beg your pardon, it's 9-8-2-1-2-2-7-9-3-4-0-0.
Yes, sir. Yeah, we have a question for you.
You're on the
Hello.
Air right now. You're on the air. Operator? Is this phone operator? We're asking. Oh, coming through a tunnel
emergency
here.
Emergency from Barney Ash. Will you release that line?
I don't think he's capable of making that kind of a call. No, I'm sorry. We can't release this line right now.
Okay.
Goodbye. You know, every time they do this, it costs how much? It costs about $3 every time they do an emergency intro.
Like they're paying for it.
Well, what are you suggesting? Anyway.
Okay.
Yes, to get back to the point you were making, sir.
I could give you the booklet when I come out there.
That would be really good. That would be really good. How many names do they have?
Well, they had like 3 or 4 code names, the president, different people, and I think the president's code name was Hog or Boss Hog or something, really.
Oh, really? I thought it was Eagle.
Well, I don't know. That's what this book claims, all right? You know, I mean, the book could be just pure. You know, it's just one of these stupid pamphlets, you know?
If you call the White House and ask for Eagle, I think you get him right away. It's weird because they have handles just like hackers have handles. You know, there's Dark Knight and Masked Avenger and all these kind of things. They're all just playing the same game. Except, you know.
Yeah. So, I'll see you there.
Okay.
Okay, and I'll see if I can, you know, maybe try to find out some more. See, I just had an old call book, you know, which would, like, but it was like over 10 years old, you know, to look up, you know, person's call letters by their name.
Right. Well, look up.
If one of your friends is a ham operator in New York that's active, he may have a more recent issue of that particular call book where you can look up the person's name.
Well,
the person's name and his relative birth date, you can find out his ham call.
Did you look up Ed Cummings?
Yeah, I did.
Nine X with an emergency interrupt for the number of 279-3400.
Uh-huh.
Martha Benning?
No, I'm sorry. We can't accept that right now.
Okay, sir. You will not free the line?
No, I stubbornly refuse to do that.
Well, what about the question?
You can say that, too.
Primary.
I'm sorry, what?
Who does she favor in the primary?
Well, actually, you know, I don't really want to talk about the primary. It's not the point of this show. I don't really care anymore.
Okay, bye now.
All right, take care.
Okay.
You know, I think that only happens on the first line. So they can, like, you know, waste their time now doing that.
Yep.
They're not
going
to be on the first line anymore. But that's a little problem with our phone system I think we can fix pretty easily. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, do you have an address and telephone number for Nuts and Volts magazine?
I don't have it on me. I've got the actual Xerox of the magazine with me, but that doesn't have the address, and they're very hard to find. I know they're in California. I think it's area code 909. If you want to call 909 information, ask for Nuts and Volts, you might get something that way.
Okay.
I'm sure one of our listeners always calls in with with that information when we lose it, which is practically every week. So if someone out there has that number, I'm sure they'll call in and tell us what it is.
Would it be possible for me to leave a message with you magazine 2600 or send a self-addressed postcard maybe?
Do you have email?
No, unfortunately I don't.
Okay, that'd be the fastest way to do that, but yeah, you can try. You can do
okay.
that.
Okay. You have a great show.
All right, thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Take
Bye.
Care. Something else I didn't mention. We were able to get a front page story in the Allentown Morning Call this past Sunday about the Bernie S. case. That was the same newspaper that wrote a terribly distorted story right after his sentencing, his hearing last month, that said basically that the Secret Service hangs up on Phone Freaker after he continues to commit fraud and garbage like that when he was never accused of committing fraud in the first place, and basically he's just been in prison all this time. They wrote a follow-up piece which was it still got some facts wrong, but I think it was much better in that it questioned what the Secret Service was doing. And that is what we've been trying to get through from the very beginning in this particular case. So there are stories out there. People are starting to take an interest in this. Other cases are being seen. We are getting someplace, and that's always good to know. 212-279-3400. Good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead. Speak up.
Hi.
Yes.
Two things. If you'll forgive me for being so naive, I don't really understand why are you not taking that call, because I would assume that it's from Bernie S. Why?
Ah, well, you see, that's the difference. You cannot assume things like that because... first of all, Bernie S. is in prison. The only kind of call he can make is a collect call. He cannot make an emergency interrupt call. What do you think are the odds of Bernie S. somehow managing to make an emergency interrupt call 1 minute after someone makes an emergency interrupt call in my name to the very same number? You know,
I have to think about what you just said, but,
I suggest you do that, yes.
Okay, my second, point was, a certain very well-known, very famous radio personality who was very concerned with issues about the FCC and censorship is also a very close friend of the congressman of Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
And I was just wondering whether or not it would be worth speaking to that radio personality about making a big issue about this case.
Well, are you able to do that?
Yes.
Well, yes, definitely. I would say speaking to anybody would be worthwhile. We should pursue all leads possible. I mean, the thing is to get awareness out there,
mm-hmm.
of a particular injustice. You tell people about it, and eventually somebody will lend an ear who can do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've made a lot of progress so far, but obviously we haven't made as much as we could.
I also wondered how could I find out what he was actually. I'm very new to this program. It's on my third week listening, and I love it, but I because I don't know the facts of his case, where would I best read about it or find out so I can tell this person the information?
Well, the last few issues of 2600 have had pretty extensive coverage of it.
Okay,
do you have
I have that address.
Okay, do you have net access?
No.
If you had net access, you could just right away get all the information possible,
so you
should work on that.
Mm-hmm.
It can be difficult at first, but once you get started, it can be... if you get the current edition of Nuts and Bolts, you'll be able to see the other case that's going on as well.
Uh-huh.
And 2600 is at newsstands if you don't have a subscription to it.
Right. Okay. I'm hoping I can draw something that will make a broadcast in 13 cities, and
uh-huh.
this person can do something.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care. There's all kinds of people we can hook up with. That might be able to help in some way, so by all means, tell whoever you can. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hey.
How you doing?
The case on Nuts and Bolts, right?
Can you speak up a little bit?
The case on Nuts and Bolts?
Yes.
If I was to do that in New York, would I get arrested?
It's possible, because the Secret Service basically is going after people who are doing things like this and using a bizarre statute which was passed about a year and a half ago. To back it up. So if you have parts that could be used to build a red box, if you have parts that could be used to copy a cellular phone number, they may come after you and prosecute you. But, you know, they seem to only do it when it's a high-profile type of a thing, when they think they can send some sort of a message. And I think that's what they're trying to do in the Bernie S. case, is send a message. Unfortunately, I don't think it's really the message they want to send.
But if that guy got off, how come I would go to jail or something?
The courts are funny, you know. You can only challenge a law if you've been convicted under it. This guy was found not guilty, and yeah, you can point to that as a precedent and say, you know, this guy was found not guilty, so I should be found not guilty too, but it doesn't strike down the law. We need to have the law changed, obviously, so that people can't even be prosecuted under this. That's the big challenge ahead. You may not want to go through the hassle of having to, get a lawyer and fight the whole system. With a good lawyer, you would be able to get off without much of a problem, I think. But then again, you know, a lot of people don't want to go through the hassle of doing that.
No, I have no idea of doing it. I was just asking.
Uh-huh.
All right, thanks a lot.
Okay. A lot of it, a lot of people are imposing self-censorship on themselves. I've heard people who publish information saying they're not going to be doing it any longer because of what's happened in the Bernie S. case. It extends beyond... the technical aspects. They were categorizing him as a dangerous person because of the books he had, because he had books on explosives. Ooh, that's scary stuff. Really scary stuff. I mean, you know, everybody collects books of some sort, and when you happen to discover Lumpanix and other publishers like that, you tend to collect all kinds of things. I've seen books, you know, how to blow up a high school, things like that. It's not meant to be taken seriously, but of course, you know, the Secret Service takes everything seriously. And they were able to use that to justify holding him without any bail whatsoever. You know, it's funny. I realize when I say that to people, sometimes they get the exact opposite impression. When I say Bernie S. was held without bail, they're like, oh, okay, no problem then. It's like, no, I don't mean they said you can go without any bail. I mean, they won't take any amount of money. You know, the Shah of Iran can come back to life and give you everything he owns, and they won't accept that. He has to stay in prison. That's how much of a danger he is. Now, this other guy, Billy Yates in Kentucky, was the opposite. He was released on his own recognizance. I think that's the best way to say it. And Bernie S. was, well, he wasn't. Let's put it that way. He was imprisoned on his own recognizance. So that's the situation we're dealing with here. Big inequity of justice. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello.
How you doing?
Well, off the hook?
Yes.
Okay, I got a number for Nuts and Bolts.
Oh, great. See, I knew this would happen.
I know.
Go ahead. What's the number?
It's 800-783.
Uh-huh.
4624.
Okay. So turn
and
that on the radio.
$19 1 year, $35 2 years.
Okay.
All right.
That sounds really good. Thank you very much for calling.
Excelente.
All right.
Bye.
It's good when people come through like that. All right. Good evening. You're on.
Good evening, Emmanuel.
How you doing?
Pretty good. We've got some information for you.
Information is what we live for.
I know that. First of all, a rumor, which I saw on the net and was trying to find but was unable to.
Okay, the internet shutdown thing was a joke, okay?
We know
don't
that.
Shut down the internet on the 29th.
We know that. It was
can't tell you how many calls and pieces of email I've gotten over.
No, this is from our friend Brock Meeks, or at least it's attributed
Brock Meeks.
To him.
He's a Secret Service expert there. He discovered they were behind the 1992 raid on the Pentagon City Mall meeting.
Well, anyway, this has to do with the infamous modem tax rumor, in a way.
Oh, that's not back again.
No. This attribution, which I may have seen in Risk Digest, is that according to Brock Meeks, there's an obscure provision in the telecom law that allows the phone companies to charge anyone on any sort of phone line for putting data over voice lines.
Oh, joy. That's
not just ISDN lines, but dialing up your internet service provider.
Mm-hmm. So what they're saying that's actually real.
That's actually real. It's not a modem tax by the government. It's allowing the phone companies to.
Can I ask you a question? How would they know what it is you're transmitting unless they listen into their phone calls?
That's the only technical flaw I saw in this discussion.
Well, that's a pretty big technical flaw, don't you think?
It's like, I do.
It's like saying that you have to be able to have the ability to read minds to enforce this.
At first glance, it sounds unbelievable, but then again, so did the Communications Decency Act.
Well, that's true, but that I could see going through just with a spirit of fundamentalism in the air.
Like I said, I thought I had forwarded that to you. I apparently didn't, and I can't find it again, but I'm looking. And the other bit of information comes from a friend of mine who's here, and I'll put her on. 1 second.
Okay.
Just a little tidbit, Eric. The instructions you were given on how better to get to Easton are absolutely accurate as per your first caller, because I used to live about 5 miles south of there.
Wait, did everybody used to come from Easton?
No, but it's a much shorter trip. You won't have to go over the Tappan Zee, although that's a nice bridge, and I think you'll find it a little easier to get there.
Well, I don't know why I would go over the Tappan Zee. That's upstate.
I thought that you were saying you were going on 87.
Well, okay, yeah, that is 87. You're right, but I'm not going to go to the origins of 87. I'm going to join 87 wherever it meets up with whatever road I take.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I was a little afraid. It's 78. It's a cool way to get there.
78.
Anyway, hopefully I'll be joining you on Tuesday.
Yeah, that would be great.
Excellent.
All right, take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. Yeah, I guess Easton is a proverbial town that everybody moves away from to get to find fame and fortune in a big city, because it's just down one road, you know? You go down one road, and here you are in New York. It's must be all kinds of fun stories coming out of there. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi.
How you doing?
The issue of nuts and bolts is February, in case anybody's curious.
That's right.
The address, the phone number the guy gave you is correct.
Okay. So two people were going to give me the phone number.
Well, I'll just repeat it, but it's 800-783-4624.
Okay.
Nuts and bolts is a good deal, and you can get it at half price at the computer, at the Trenton Computer Fair in April.
Do you know of any place in New York that sells this magazine?
I would guess in the Village there's a very By Broadway, just north of NYU, there's a very good bookstore, magazine store that has all sorts of stuff, and I would be very surprised if they don't have it. Also, like in Grand Central Station, and some of the Barnes and Nobles have very good magazines these days. I know that you can get the shortwave book out of North Carolina, the magazine that they publish. I forgot the name of it, but I wouldn't be surprised if that place on Broadway must be around 8th Street and Broadway in the Village.
That's Hudson News. Yeah.
Hudson, exactly right.
Yeah, they may have it as well. Well, if someone finds it for sure, let us know, and then we can tell people where to get it, because it is a very hard magazine to track down sometimes.
Well, I'm sure it's a current, it's a February issue, and because I was reading the article before I got on the air, and I just this afternoon, it was just a coincidence I happened to see it.
And you would have told us about it, right?
No, I wasn't.
But you would have told us about it, though, had we not discovered it on our own, right?
No, I didn't think it was too relevant. Of course, you know, I really detest the federal government, and you know, I think. You know, if all these people want less government, why don't they do away with the copyright laws? If you want to see some people go crazy.
Well, that would have a fair amount of insanity in the air.
But anyhow, it's a good program. I enjoy it.
Okay, well, thanks for calling.
Hey, listen, if you guys ever come across low-cost long-distance, you should just keep announcing that sort of stuff.
We're always looking for low-cost long-distance.
Okay.
All right, take care.
All right.
Good evening. You're on the air. Yes, go ahead.
I want to comment regarding cellular phones and making extensions, etc. I just want to mention that on one of the alt groups, I think it's alt.cellulartech, or technical, they discuss this type of thing.
Okay.
And they've been discussing that other case that you have mentioned.
Have they discussed both of these cases?
They've not discussed Bernie S. at all, but they constantly discuss making extensions to cellular phones, and they're discussing that guy who fought, who fought it in court.
Oh, that's amazing. I don't understand why they aren't talking about Bernie S. when this case has been so... We've tried so hard to get this out, you know. We've posted it every place. I wasn't aware of that particular news group.
Yeah, well, when you do a search for news groups, search with the name Cellular.
Uh-huh.
And there's one or two news groups, because there's one that I read all the time devoted to Cellular.
Uh-huh.
And I know every now and then you talk about stuff you get in the mail.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you may have won $500 million.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with my current Visa bill, I got something that said I could be winning a lot of money. I read all the fine print, and it said they're sending out 5 million entries, which is more than the entire population in the United States. So I have a big rubber stamp.
Wait a minute. Whoa. Yeah. What year are you in? There's more than 5 million people in the United States?
No, I mean 500 million. 500
okay.
million, which is like double the population in the United States.
Well, for now, yeah, okay.
Yeah, okay.
We're getting there, though.
Well, I think we're about 235 million, something like that.
Just got to knock down a few more trees.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, along with the payment of my Visa bill, I'm sending them back their entry form, rubber stamp. Well, I won't say the words over the air, but the abbreviation is BS.
Uh-huh.
I have this rubber stamp that says that. I've not used this for a long time.
Uh-huh.
The last time I used it was with a phone bill that every month they were not giving me the correction they promised to give me.
Uh-huh.
After I stamped that and wrote a few other expletives, they finally straightened out the bill.
Wow. Well, do you think a human ever actually saw it, though?
Yes, a human saw that one with a phone bill, because they called up my wife and said that we should not be sending that type of letter because the mail is opened up by young ladies.
Ah. Wouldn't want to offend anybody.
Yeah, but they straightened up the bill when they got that last letter.
Uh-huh. Well, that's good to get people's attention in whatever way you have to.
Well, it certainly does. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they will take a look at this because they're going to be looking for parts that we have filled in with our account number for this more or less scam contest.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really to get us to enter sign up for magazine subscriptions. They have to look at it because they want to see what magazine subscriptions we're signing up for, which is nil.
Uh-huh.
But some of the credit card companies send you out all this junk mail with your bill. Some don't, and some of them are really scammy. There's a place at the top where they want you to initial, but if you initial that, you're buying at an extra cost insurance. In case you get disabled, so that you can pay off your phone, your charge card bill, and I bet you some people just initial that without really reading what they are what they're initialing. They think they're just initialing that the bill is okay.
Interesting.
Yep.
Never initial anything without knowing what your initial policy.
That's how I read everything. I mean, I just got a pile of checks. I'm an actor. I got a pile of checks, and most of them are wrong.
Uh-huh.
From different movies I've worked in. I mean, they don't pay us for all the hours we're supposed to be paid. One of them deducted $15 for recouped payments. I called them up. They said, oh, it's a mistake. We'll give you the money back. I mean, you got to read. I mean, you got to be a damn bookkeeper to survive nowadays.
That's certainly true.
And read everything with a magnifying glass.
Yeah. Well, bookkeepers and people who make magnifying glasses are in their heyday right
that's
now.
That's right.
All right, listen, thanks for sharing that with us.
Fine.
I was thinking, for these credit card things, it would be a good idea to come up with, rip-off insurance. You know, it insures you against being ripped off. If you get ripped off, then, you know, they pay you back whatever you got ripped off. But the insurance is expensive. I think that's it's a great idea, you know. No one's done it yet, though. Okay, just about out of time. You know, I heard something before, though. AT&T is offering free internet access to its customers. Did you hear about this?
Not at all. No.
Well, this was just announced. They're going to be offering free internet access to all their customers for, I think, 5 hours a month. And then after that, it's something like $20. And that is their first step into the world of internet providing.
And how do you get a hold of these AT&T people?
Well, I don't know. You have to be pre-subscribed to them, and I imagine they'll contact you if you are.
I am, okay.
Well,
I'll just sit and wait.
You'll be getting a letter of some sort, or someone will come to your door and sell you this internet thing. And you'll get it through AT&T. I don't know exactly, you know, this is something I heard on the radio, so I don't know how accurate it is. I can't believe I just said that. But it's, you know, sometimes they get it wrong when they first say it.
Right.
When they say internet, they might mean something like, you know, AOL or Prodigy or, you know, one of those other internet lookalike things. So I don't know. We'll just have to see as time goes by.
Well, I think we should just avoid all these newfangled contraptions altogether.
Yeah, it's never going to catch on. Well, we're out of here. Our time is up. But we'll be back again next week. And next week we will have the update on Bernie S.'s sentencing and see how things went with him. Also find out why he didn't call this week if some kind of crisis came up or anything like that. If you want information, you can finger Bernie S. at 2600.com. That's B-E-R-N-I-E-S. And you can also visit our website for the latest information there. If you want to send us email, OTH at 2600.com, or individually, Emmanuel, and Fiber at 2600.com. Fiber spelled P-H-I-B-E-R. We'll be back again next week, and we'll have all these fun updates for you then. In the meantime, if you see an interesting news story, please pass it along to us, and we'll be happy to share it with other people. Till next week, good night.
Are tuned to listener-sponsored WBAI-FM in New York City. Coming up next is Housing Notebook.
Wall, dirt piling in the hall. I've done the patch, but no steam at all. Landlord, landlord, low down, rotten, good for nothing.